What to expect when no one's expecting America's coming demographic disaster. That's the title of a new book by Jonathan V. Last. IBC's Senior Vice President Eddie Aldrete shares some of the author's concerns, mostly about how people in America are having fewer babies. That may sound counterintuitive to those stuck in traffic or waiting in long lines while Christmas shopping, but Aldrete says the stats show the country's fertility rate is declining.
It's an interesting phenomenon that what's happening across the country. People are getting married later. There's more people in the workforce. I mean, if you compare our workforce today to what it was in 1950 or 1960, you obviously have a lot more women in the workforce. And when there's more women in the workforce, I mean, if you go back to 1960, a lot of women were getting married at age 18 and they were having children by the age of 21. That's not the case anymore. More and more women are going to college. More couples are putting off getting married until later years. And then once they get married later, they tend to have fewer children because at that stage, they're both older. Both people in the couple.
So what exactly is the problem with this?
Well, the problem is that having fewer children in this country has a big impact on every aspect of life, economic, cultural, social, political, business, societal, you name it, it has an impact on our lives. First and foremost, having the fewer children is on the opposite edge of the baby boom generation. And the baby boom generation was following World War II, when all of a sudden a lot of our veterans were coming home and families were being created and people were having three, four, five children. And today that's not the case anymore. A lot of the baby boomers have already begun to retire. And the baby boom generation is defined by if you were born between 1946 and 1964. And there's 10 to 15 million boomers that are leaving the workforce. More boomers that are leaving the workforce than we have younger people entering the workforce. So question number one is, who fills the jobs that are left vacant by those 10 to 15 million people that are leaving the workforce? And that doesn't even begin to include all the new jobs that are created by our economy every year.
And sort of the problems with Social Security, where we have fewer taxpayers paying into that.
Exactly.
Now, how does immigration factor into this picture?
Well, it's at the heart of our workforce struggles that we have across the country. You name an industry, and I can probably identify a shortage in that industry. Most industries across this country, from manufacturing to aerospace to agriculture, the restaurant industry, the retail industry, we're seeing a massive shortage of workers. And again, that's because you have fewer people entering the workforce than you have they're retiring. And ironically, one of the industries that struggles with retirements the worst is the United States Border Patrol. According to the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, 51% of all Customs and Border Protection agents became eligible for retirement in 2012. So every time a member of Congress says, let's double or triple the size of the Border Patrol, the first question is, how are you going to do that? Because for everyone you hire, you're going to lose one to retirement. So it's hard to get in front of that curve.
So are you proposing more immigration, open the floodgates, let people come to help fill these jobs and for our economy?
No, I think we have to look. I think we should be selfish as a country. And I think we should ask instead of just, you know, what do we think we should do? I think we should ask, what do we need? If you look at what other countries are doing, they scour the rest of the world. We're in a global race for talent. You've heard people like Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, and other leading people, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook. You've heard them talk about that we need to staple a green card to the diploma of a lot of the foreign students who come here. Why should we give them the benefit of getting the best education in the world here in the United States and then allowing them to leave the country? They should be encouraged or even asked to stay in this country and give something back to the country that helped give them an education. So we have major workforce challenges, and if we're not having enough children, then you have to make that up by importing the labor.
So I can hear people who are opposed to immigration and especially illegal immigration saying, why don't we just encourage American citizens to have more babies?
Well, we've been trying to do that for years, and there's really no proof of it in the history of the world. Caesar Augustus tried charging a bachelor tax. Jonathan Lass talked about this in his book, and as a way to get more people to get married and to have more children. He also references how Russia adopted a motherhood medallion as a way. Japan and France and Italy and other countries have tried paying women per child. Japan pays women about $3,500 per year per child until the child reaches the age of 14. Now, here's what's interesting. In 2011, the largest manufacturer of diapers in Japan announced that for the first time ever that adult diapers outsold baby diapers. Now, that's a country that's an economic disaster in slow motion because they have reached the point of no return. They've hit the tipping point where most demographers agree that once you reach about 1.5, 1.6 children per adult female, that that's the tipping point, and Japan's at 1.2, 1.3.
All this being said, immigration reform is in limbo nationally speaking, but what would be your top proposal, reform proposal?
Well, first of all, we need to take a look and see what we need. Do we need more nuclear physicists? If we do, then allow more nuclear physicists to come in. If we need more bricklayers, then lower the quota on nuclear physicists and raise the quota on bricklayers. We need to take a hard look at what we need in this country. The law of supply and demand is very simple and very basic, and it's very true. And so what happens is we saw a few years ago with the massive shortage of agricultural workers, we began to fortify our border. And every time you do something, it's like the law of physics. You have an equal and opposite reaction for every action. So what happened was when there was a shortage of agricultural workers in California, the agricultural producers started moving their operations to Mexico, where labor is plentiful. Google and Intel and eBay and many of the high-tech companies have large workforces in Canada on the other side of the border because we have such a low quota on software engineers, and they're a dime a dozen in Canada. And so why, in this difficult economic time period, why would we be sending low-skilled work to Mexico and high-skilled work to Canada when every single one of those jobs could stay right here in the United States? Again, I go back to the fact if we choose to be selfish, then let's take a look and do what's in the best interest of our country. Not what we feel is right because what our heart says, but literally what is in the best interest in this country. Too often people look at this issue from an emotional standpoint, and I don't. I look at it from a business and economic standpoint. And the reality is that the numbers don't lie. We're having fewer children, and that means fewer people entering the workforce, which means shortages, which means either difficulty getting products or prices are going to go up because they can't produce it fast enough.
I mean, all we hear is more boots on the ground, more border security, even border surges. And so that seems to be the tactic, especially in Texas.
Well, law enforcement is a very, very important part of this component. But unfortunately, some people get obsessed with that component and they're not looking at anything else. I sort of see this issue like an iceberg. People see the tip of the iceberg and they become obsessed with it and almost blinded by it because that's all they're staring at. But it's not the tip of the iceberg that can sink a ship. It's the large mass underneath the water that no one's paying attention to or that no one sees. And that's the same mass that has the potential to sink our economy if we don't start paying more attention to it. You know, just going back to your question about fewer children, just to give you an example, my family, we're not average, but I'll use my family as an example. My father was from Del Rio. My mother was from Brownsville. My father was one of 11 children. My mother was one of 11 children. I'm one of five. My wife is one of five, and we have three. So we've gone from 11 to 5 down to 3. So you can see the inverted pyramid and how in many cases we criticize countries like China for having a one-child policy. But the reality is if you are an Anglo college-educated female that lives in an urban area in the United States, you have a one-child policy.
But an informal.
Yeah. Yes, it's by choice and not by decree.
Right.
I just think, you know, that we need to take a look at this issue from a business and economic standpoint and a demographic standpoint. If you follow the numbers, they will lead you to what the solution is. And the solution is quite simple. If you don't have enough people to fill certain jobs, then you have to find that human capital somewhere else. And if we're not out chasing that talent, other countries are. And every job in this country is important because they each add up and play a critical role to the success of our economy.